Support for On Point and the following message come from Rocket Mortgage by Quicken Loans. Home plays a big role in your life. That's why Quicken Loans created Rocket Mortgage. It lets you apply simply and understand the entire mortgage process fully, so you can be confident that you're getting the right mortgage for you. To get started, go to rocketmortgage.com/onpoint.
From WBUR Boston and NPR, I'm Jane Clayson, and this is On Point. It's Juneteenth, a holiday you might not have heard much about, but will be officially celebrated in 45 states across the country today. It traces its roots back to June 19, 1865, more than 2 years after the Emancipation Proclamation, when a Union general traveled to Texas to announce slaves had been freed. Since then, their descendants and friends have marked the day with cookouts, red cola, and live music. This hour On Point, celebrating Juneteenth. You can join us on air or online. How do you celebrate Juneteenth? Is this the first you're hearing of it? Join us anytime at onpointradio.org or on Twitter and Facebook at On Point Radio. Joining me first from Austin, Texas, is Dinah Ramey Berry. She's a professor of history, African, and African diaspora studies at the University of Texas at Austin. She's also the author and editor of multiple books, including The Price for Their Pound of Flesh, The Value of the Enslaved from Womb to Grave in the Building of a Nation. Dinah, welcome to On Point. Great to have you.
Hi, Jane. Thanks for having me.
Help us understand this holiday that's now celebrated in 45 states. What is Juneteenth exactly?
So Juneteenth represents the day, as you mentioned, on June 19th, when enslaved people in the state of Texas were finally informed that they had been freed after the end of the Civil War. And some people talk about this as being 2 years too late because they think about the Emancipation Proclamation, which was issued by Lincoln, President Lincoln at the time, for January 1st of 1863. And that proclamation stated that all enslaved people in the states of rebellion would be free if they had not come back to the Union. Enslaved people in Texas did not learn of their freedom until June 19th, and that's why we celebrate it on this day.
Why didn't those in Texas hear about it? Why didn't they know about it sooner?
Many of their enslavers chose not to tell them. They chose to keep living and to keep functioning in a system of slavery that was known before the war. And also, you know, for some of them and a number of other Southern slaveholders believed that Lincoln wasn't their president, so they didn't have to respond to the Emancipation Proclamation. It was not their objective or duty to free the enslaved.
Hmm. Well, here's some sound from this Juneteenth celebration. Even though the Union Army General Gordon Granger announced the total emancipation of slaves in 1865 in Galveston, Texas, it wasn't fully recognized as a holiday in the state until 1979. Here's Doug Matthews, coordinator of the Galveston Juneteenth Coalition on American History TV. This is from 2015, describing how the recognition and the celebration of the holiday spread from there.
It was mainly here in the South where the celebration was you had major celebration. Today, you have big celebrations in Milwaukee, you have Los Angeles, Washington, D.C., New York, San Antonio. There are a lot of, over 40 states, and we've been told that there are at least five foreign countries that even celebrate the Juneteenth.
Dinah, so over 40 states, 45, I think, celebrate, five foreign countries. What were the early celebrations like of Juneteenth?
The early celebrations, particularly in Texas, were really interesting because formerly enslaved people wanted their children and their grandchildren to know about the history of slavery. So it wasn't just about the picnics and the barbecues and the roasted pork and all that. It was also about teaching them about the history of slavery and about knowing about those of them who had experienced it. They would sometimes read the proclamation that General Granger read. They would listen to the words of that. They would also listen to testimonies from elders talk about their experiences with slavery. And it was very important for them to recognize and understand their history in this country. And that's one of the main things that African Americans did. Now, we do know that there were celebrations in the state capital in Texas, in Austin, as early as 1869. We also know that they were celebrating, there were a few celebrations in 1867, I think it was. And they did have, you know, parades and they had barbecues, but it was also a place and a time of reflection. And I think that's something that gets missed in today's conversation that I hope we continue to do, is really understand the history of slavery in the United States.
And the name itself, Juneteenth, where does that come from?
June 19th. They kind of put the words together. So the 19th of June, that's where it comes from.
Hmm. One of the most famous Juneteenth celebrations occurred in 1968 when Martin Luther King Jr.'s widow, Coretta Scott King, decided to cut short the Poor People's March and commemorate it with Juneteenth celebrations. On that day, known as Solidarity Day, she delivered a speech before as many as 100,000 people on the National Mall. Here she is.
Perhaps racism can be traced to that dark period in our history when slavery became institutionalized for 244 years and segregation was practiced for another 100 years. So you see, the roots of racism are very deep in the psyche of the American white man.
Tell us about that celebration of Juneteenth, that special day, Dinah.
That was special because you have here the leader, the wife of the leader of the civil rights movement, talking about and making connections between the history of slavery and the civil rights movement, and about the different challenges of segregation that, and some of the gains that have recently been found with the Civil Rights Act, the passing of the Civil Rights Act and the Voting Rights Act. And, but there's a connection here that she's making about this history and about that although people were given their freedom officially from slavery, they were still struggling for equal rights in this country. And I think it was a very important connection around a very difficult time in their lives.
Let me bring another voice into the conversation, Dinah, at this point. From Washington, Van Newkirk II is a staff writer for The Atlantic. He wrote a piece about this. You can link to it at our website, Why Juneteenth Must Be Celebrated. Van, welcome back to On Point. Nice to have you.
Thanks for having me.
What drew you to write about this, Van?
So it's the legend, the history of Juneteenth has been something that's always been on my mind when thinking about what are sort of the things that are emblematic of the African-American experience in this country. And it occurred to me that Juneteenth is a perfect crystallization or distillation of what it's meant to be African-American. It starts again as a Texas holiday, but it's exported throughout the country, becomes sort of merged with lots of local emancipation customs. It becomes the largest emancipation holiday in the United States in pretty short order, and that's part of the Great Migration. So you have this history of movement that has been central to the black story in America. Mm. You have people tying it again to slavery and never losing track of the fact that so much of what's the edifice has built today is built on slavery. So that's another part of it. And then I think the ways in which people celebrate it, there's no one right way to celebrate Juneteenth. It's we just talked about people reading the declarations, reading the proclamations of emancipation, not just in Texas, but Lincoln's in 1863. Those are things that people in, if you go to Jamaica, you'll see Jamaican people reading their declaration of emancipation and independence as a hallmark of liberation. So all these things together, I think, are components of not just a black American story, but a black story, a globally black story. And I think those are things that as we try to figure out the modern racial moment, we should be paying attention to.
Got a lot of calls here. I want to get one first from Tom in Manchester, Connecticut. Hi, Tom. Welcome to the program.
Hello, Jane.
Hi.
Yes. I'm African-American, and I had participated, as an onlooker for Juneteenth in 1987, before my aunt's passing. She lived down in San Antonio, so I did see a parade and had Olivia Brown, who was a co-star in the show Miami Vice. I guess she grew up there, so she was in one of the cars that was driving by mm-hmm. in the parade. So it was quite and moving. And I think it should be in every history book. Where I live in Connecticut. We celebrate it since 1992 over 3 days in the towns and cities, especially our capital city of Hartford, probably coming up this weekend. You know, Friday night's a big gala, and then there's two other events, Saturday and Sunday, and it's important for the children. And I think for all of us, because with slavery, some slave masters did keep moving their slaves despite the fact of the Emancipation Proclamation. It was their tenet for the Confederacy to maintain slavery. Jefferson Davis, the president of the Confederacy, was a slave owner from Mississippi, and most Confederates didn't own slaves, but I guess they believed in that cause in a different way for secession, and they fought bravely for 4 years. But on the end, with African Americans did a fight for their freedom in the Union Army, Navy, and as non-combatants in different ways with helping out. So, and then it was also a good sign after the war for 9 years for Reconstruction until that was squashed by, you know, Klan terror segregation laws. But just want to end on this. I think Ken Burns will be doing an upcoming documentary in a few years on Reconstruction. I know there have been good books about it, so that should be also noted, too. But, yeah, I think it is important to understand various facets of slavery, but not in a negative way, but in a positive way, that there were blacks, you know, fighting against the odds, forget education. And, you
and
know,
Juneteenth is a way to recognize that and celebrate those times. Van Kirk, take us to break here. You've written that this is both a second Independence Day, Juneteenth is, and a reminder of ongoing repression.
Yeah. I think it should be considered the truth of American independence. July 4th only represents when white men in this country were made free. You think about the masses. Juneteenth represents the true fulfillment of what people believe to be that declaration and what people believe to be freedom in this country.
We're discussing Juneteenth this hour, its history, its significance, and celebrations today. And you can join the conversation. What does Juneteenth mean to you? What does it mean to celebrate Juneteenth in this current political and cultural climate? Here are the Blind Boys of Alabama with an a cappella version of the slave spiritual Free at Last. This song was one of deliverance for slaves, and the word free was couched in the symbolism of the Bible. We go out on this song. I'm Jane Clayson. This is On Point. We'll be right back.
Thank God Almighty, I'm free at last.
He missed the soul that he thought he had.
Thank God Almighty, I'm free at last.
Free at last.
Free at last. Thank God Almighty, I'm free at last.
Free at last.
Free at last. Thank God Almighty, I'm free at last.
Support for On Point and the following message come from Rocket Mortgage by Quicken Loans. Chances are you're confident when it comes to your work, your hobbies, and your life. Rocket Mortgage gives you that same level of confidence when it comes to buying a home or refinancing your existing home loan. Rocket Mortgage is simple, allowing you to fully understand all the details and be confident you're getting the right mortgage for you. To get started, go to rocketmortgage.com/onpoint. Equal housing lender, licensed in all 50 states. NMLSconsumerAccess.org, number 3030.
The news can feel like an echo chamber. You listen to podcasts to get that perspective shift. So travel with NPR's Rough Translation. Follow familiar conversations in unfamiliar parts of the world and get a new perspective on home. Rough Translation. Find it wherever you get your podcasts.
This is On Point. I'm Jane Clayson. We're talking about slavery, emancipation, and what we can learn from our nation's past as we celebrate Juneteenth. You can join this conversation. What does the recognition and celebration of Juneteenth mean to you, for the country? What foods are part of your celebration? Follow us on Twitter and find us on Facebook at On Point Radio. My guest today, Dinah Ramey Berry. She's professor of history, African and African diaspora studies at the University of Texas at Austin, and Van Newkirk, staff writer at The Atlantic. Well, Austin, Texas celebrated Juneteenth this last Sunday with a parade through the eastern part of the city. Here is KXAN television anchor Aaron Cargile talking with resident Vennie Davis.
That is all it takes, a marching band to get people dancing in the streets. This is the annual Juneteenth parade. A lot of folks braving the heat to cheer on the groups marching through East Austin. For many folks, this is a long time tradition.
And we can come out with the family and And just see us celebrate a diverse section of people of Austin. And it's a beautiful occasion celebrating freedom.
Got a lot of calls here. Let's get Carl in from Akron, Ohio. Hi, Carl. Welcome to On Point.
How you doing today?
Good. Go ahead, sir.
Okay. I celebrate. Mom's from Texas, so as a kid, we used to migrate down there to see the grandparents and everything. So I was familiar with Juneteenth as a child. I celebrated with just a degree of ambivalence because me personally, I always felt that the ratification of the 13th Amendment, which gave freedom to all slaves, including those in the border states, we have to remind ourselves the Emancipation Proclamation did not free slaves in those states which were not in rebellion against the Union. The 13th Amendment always felt should be a holiday that we black people, I myself being black, mm-hmm. should celebrate. That we should take that. If the nation doesn't do it, it should be like a holiday like Hanukkah or something where we as a people take it upon ourselves to have observance to it. The only reason I have a bit of ambivalence, I celebrate the freedom that the slaves got on Juneteenth, but I also keep in mind that there was a degree of treachery with that. I mean, they were set free prior to that, and the slave owners just disregarded it. So in other words, I mean, I'm celebrating the joy of the release of bondage, but in the same breath, I'm feeling that I'm rewarding giving a smirk to the treachery that was placed upon those people.
Carl, thank you very much. Dinah Remy Berry, what would you say to that? Do you agree with that on some level?
Yeah, I do. And I actually appreciate him bringing up sort of the mixed emotions that people have with this particular holiday. I think it's typical when you think about the history of slavery and the idea that freedom was denied for so many years and then it was reluctantly given. And it doesn't mean that on June 19th, as he mentioned, as the caller mentioned, that all enslaved people in Texas or even other places were free. The ratification of the 13th Amendment didn't happen until December 6th of 1865. Mm. So if we're looking at the technical date, and I always say this to my students in class, that all African Americans, regardless of where they lived in the United States, were granted their official freedom by December 6th of 1865. Mm. And I think that's an important point.
Were slaves free to celebrate openly in those early celebrations of Juneteenth, Dinah?
It really depended upon their former owners. Some, yes. And one of the things I like to look at is to see what enslaved people said or thought. And some of them say that they don't remember. This one woman, Betty Farrell, said, "I don't remember being told I was free. We just stayed right there on the farm because it was the only home we knew and we had no reason to go." But there are others that picked up their bags and left immediately. Like the minute they heard they were free, they left. And some of them talked about how they grabbed their bags and they were dancing in the street. They were singing and shouting and they took off, and their fathers and the rest of their families that they had been separated from reunited with them later. So it really varies on the community they lived in and whether or not they wanted to stay, whether they wanted to leave, whether they could stay or could leave.
Van Newkirk, what's your reaction to our caller Carl, who says he celebrates Juneteenth with a degree of ambivalence?
I think that ambivalence is probably, that should be the spirit of the holiday. He raised a great point, which is, where are we dating actual liberation? Are we dating the sort of legal end of slavery, the one that would be ratified and amended to the Constitution? Are we talking about the de facto liberation from slavery under law? Are we talking about, there were people who were still considered peons, who were in peonage, which is basically forced labor. Lots of black people existed in that state until the 1940s. So we're really talking about the actual end of enslavement. And we can go in even further than that. Are we talking about actual entrance into citizenship, which you could argue doesn't even happen until 1965 with the Voting Rights Act? Mm-hmm. So all these things, I think, are pieces that you should have at the very front of your mind when you're thinking about Juneteenth. Because I think the main lesson of the holiday, of the commemoration, and the thing that was on the minds of people who chose to heralded as a holiday in this century was the fact that liberation is always something that is delayed. It's always on the horizon. There's always something else left to do. And that's something that we should be considering today.
Here's Aaron in Detroit, Michigan. Hi, Aaron. I'm glad you called.
Hi, Jane.
Hi.
Interesting show. I just wanted to make a few points. I'm African-American, and I just wanted to say that all African people, all people of African heritage don't celebrate Juneteenth, not because we don't understand or appreciate why the people in Texas or in the South would be excited about that, but freedom as defined, you know, we don't really believe that it's happened yet. Your guest was just saying about the Voting Rights Act and other things, but, you know, freedom is having total control over oneself or self-ownership. Everything we have and everything we need to live is still controlled by someone else. And during what was so-called emancipation, there was nothing given. You know, when the Jews were emancipated, they were given something to take with them.
Well, you think we still have a long way to go, Aaron. I hear you. They're in Detroit. Let's get Susan in here from Columbia, Tennessee. Hi, Susan. You're on the air.
Hi, Jane. My comment is I've never even heard of Juneteenth, and I have read extensively and watched many documentaries and things about slavery and the Civil War, the Civil Rights Movement, and I naively felt I was pretty up to speed on, you know, how things were and what have you. And somehow, even in all those books I've read and documentaries I've watched, and many of them I've watched more than once, this has totally escaped me, and I'm fascinated by this, but I was curious if it has more to do with the fact that I live in the South, or where is this celebrated? I've never even heard anyone mention it before.
Susan, thank you. Dinah Ramey Berry?
So this is actually celebrated in 45 states, currently including the District of Columbia. It's recognized as a holiday, and it depends on where people live, whether or not the county officials or local community actually has celebrations to honor Juneteenth, but it is recognized, and it's recognized by 45 states.
Let me bring another voice into the conversation now from Denver, Colorado. Adrian Miller, a soul food scholar who is currently the executive director of the Colorado Council of Churches. He is the author of Soul Food, the surprising story of an American cuisine, one plate at a time, which won the James Beard Foundation Book Award for reference and scholarship. Adrian, welcome to On Point. Nice to have you.
Yeah, good to be with you.
So we've been talking today about Juneteenth and the celebration of it in 45 states and historically sort of what it's meant. Tell us more about the celebrations of the holiday and specifically the food that's connected to Juneteenth celebrations.
Right. So in addition to just celebrating the news, you know, slavery ending, it became a communal celebration, and food was prominent out of it. And when you think of Juneteenth, most people think of barbecue, red drink, and I believe that red Kool-Aid is the official soul food drink, but in Texas, they usually have big red soda, and then watermelon and other things. And so as Juneteenth has spread across the country, those foods have traveled with it and get associated with the celebration.
What's the significance of red drink?
Well, we have two ancestral red drinks that come across the Atlantic during the Atlantic slave trade from West Africa, and you probably have had both of them. One is cola, and the cola nuts are either white or reddish, and then also hibiscus, which is a flower native to West Africa. And so people would often make drinks using the nuts or the flower petals to color the drink and sweeten it to taste, and that's the same basic formula as Kool-Aid.
Mm.
I think that's the connection.
So dress was also an important element in early Juneteenth customs. How so?
Well, in terms of, you know, giving honor to those that have come before and also showing off your finest, you know, you have the same tradition in churches and things. So really, it's just a matter of kind of black pride and really just celebrating the very best of our culture.
Hmm. Van Newkirk, could you give us a sense of some of the celebrations you've seen, some of the food that has been presented, sort of what the customs are in maybe your own family?
Yeah, so I think the distinguishing factor of Juneteenth, especially outside of Texas, is how diverse the celebrations have been. There are people in Virginia who engage in like this ritual baptism on a beach that was used to be a segregated beach back in the day, and there's a cookout involved. And I think, you know, we just talked about food. Food is a common part of these celebrations. You'll see people go back and import Big Red from Texas. I've seen Big Ride all over the place on Juneteenth in Atlanta. I've seen it in Los Angeles. It's spread itself. You also see people who don't have access to Juneteenth. Say in North Carolina, I've seen people drinking what's called cheer wine, which is a similar kind of soda in celebration. You've seen lots of things. I think there was a do-rag festival in Charlotte, North Carolina this weekend to celebrate. There are people, you know, there are head wraps that are special. There are all different kinds of things, spades tournaments, you name it. People who just enjoy taking the day to celebrate and bring in local existing customs and sort of raise them up as part of being Black. Mm.
Adrian Miller, Van mentions cheer wine. I guess there are local customs and things that are brought in over time. The evolution of the food as part of celebration. I'm sure that has evolved over time, Adrian.
Oh, absolutely. If you look in the late 1800s, the earliest celebrations, people were drinking red lemonade. And red lemonade transitions to carbonated beverages, red soda pop, and then other drinks. So you do see people kind of adapting to their local traditions and what they really liked and enjoyed. But the commonality is having some kind of red sweet drink as part of the celebration. Mm.
Adrian Miller, a soul food scholar, thanks so much for being with us today.
Thank you.
Adding to the conversation, I appreciate it. Let's get Lewis in here from Augusta, Georgia. Hi, Lewis.
Yes. Hi, Jane.
Hi. Nice to have you, sir. Go ahead.
Yes, I was in San Antonio, Texas in 1946 with the Air Force, and we were not told anything except that it was a day off. And when we went into town, no one said anything about Juneteenth at all. It's just it was a day off, and we were puzzled that it was a day off, but we were glad for it. Interestingly, I had attended a Black institution. It was Hampton Institute then. It's now Hampton University. Took Negro history, it was called then, and nothing was made of Juneteenth. So I'm saying I'm glad that we have arrived, and it's certainly a good day to celebrate.
May I ask you how old you are, sir?
I'm 90, and I'm a retired Episcopal priest, better known as Father B. It's Father Bowler, but they call me Father B. I am 90 as of November the 28th, 1927.
I'm glad you called. Thank you very much. I appreciate your insight, Lewis. Thanks, and your experience. Dinah, that's interesting that the day off was given to Lewis there, but he didn't even know why.
I think it is interesting, but it also is telling. We know that, as I mentioned earlier, it wasn't a state official holiday until 1980 in the state of Texas, but it was celebrated as early as 1866, 1867 in pockets throughout the state. I think one of the challenges and one of the reasons why there's ambivalence or hesitation among some legislatures or even some county officials is that it raises the issue of a time period in our nation's history that people are either ashamed of or angry about or don't really want to discuss. And it raises the issue of slavery and freedom and equality and justice. And these are issues that are still hot button issues today. So I think that even then, in 1946, there were challenges that we still see today.
You wrote a book, Dinah, about the price of slaves and talked about the price of the soul and how slaves saw their worth. It was very incredibly moving. And I wish you'd take us out in the last couple of minutes here and tell us a bit about that.
Well, thank you. So enslaved people were treated as property, as commodities, you know, in an auction and even in their everyday lives. But there was something that they had, many of them had deep down inside themselves, that was a value that could not be commodified, could not be priced, and that was the value of their soul. Not all enslaved people had what I call soul value, but some of them did. And those that did pushed back against the horrific treatment of their bodies and of their families, of the family separation that they experienced. And they used soul value as a way to survive and to think about a place beyond where they were in that moment and to think about themselves as being freed people, even if a system still enslaved them. The value of their soul was infinite, in their opinion, and there was no monetary value that could calculate or cover them.
Hmm. Van Newkirk, I'm curious your response when you hear Dinah speak of that.
I just think there's so much. You talk about soul value. There's so much richness in black cultural celebrations, Juneteenth being one of them. And I think it's just a heartening time nowadays to see people trying to reach back to the ancestors, to carry what they carried, mothers carrying this legacy with them, passing it down to children. In a world where it seems like so much of the infrastructure is built to suppress a kind of memory. Incarceration does this. All these different things do this. This is something special right now.
Well, we're discussing Juneteenth, a holiday we're celebrating today. Coming up, we'll look at how we teach America's history, particularly with regard to the slaveholding era. We'd love to have you join us, listeners. Are our textbooks doing a sufficient job of explaining the horrors of slavery? What more should we be doing in the classroom to engage in productive conversations about race? Is this holiday an opportunity? We go to break here with Mavis Staples. This is the mid-19th century spiritual, Nobody Knows the Trouble I've Seen. Back after this break, I'm Jane Clayson. This is On Point.
Nobody knows. Nobody knew. Well, well, well. Nobody but Jesus. Nobody but Jesus. Nobody but Jesus. He knows all about it. Hey. Oh, my Jesus. Lily of the Valley.
Hey, it's Guy Raz here, host of How I Built This. And on our latest episode, how Chip Wilson turned workout clothes into a fashion statement. And along the way, built a breakout brand, Lululemon, now worth billions. You can listen to How I Built This on Apple Podcasts or however you get your podcasts.
This is On Point. I'm Jane Clayson. We're talking about lessons from history on Juneteenth today, and you can join us. How do we engage with our nation's history surrounding slavery? On this day of celebration, what resonates with you about Juneteenth? Follow us on Twitter and find us on Facebook at On Point Radio. Great panel today. My guest, Dinah Ramey Berry. She's a professor of history, African and African diaspora studies at the University of Texas at Austin. And Van Newkirk, staff writer at The Atlantic. I want to play this sound here. This is Rochester, Minnesota. It celebrated Juneteenth on Saturday. W.C. Jordan, the president of the Rochester chapter of the NAACP, told KTTC Television that the holiday is about more than just African-American history and tradition.
When we look at this day, a lot of times because it's Africans that were in slavery, people think of it as black history. But this is all American history. These are things that happened in America.
And this is a clip from season 4, the premiere of the ABC show Blackish. Andre Dre Johnson, one of the show's main characters, discusses slavery and freedom with one of his white coworkers. In the following clip, one coworker suggests that Dre, and by extension, all African Americans, should just get over slavery already.
I'm just saying, Dre, that maybe it's healthier for you to put all this negativity behind you. Your people, well, they have been free for a long time.
Long time.
Really?
Yeah.
You think we're free? Your tone makes me feel this is a trick question.
Things just didn't get better on June 20th. Even when we were free, we weren't free.
From there, the episode flashes back to a fictional moment on June 19, 1865, and through a Broadway-inspired musical number, the cast explains that Juneteenth did not mark some magical end to black people's suffering in this country. I've got so many calls. I want to get one in here. Al in Tampa, Florida, first. Hi, Al. You're on.
Hi, Jane. Just a really quick question. I was wondering if anyone on your panel can address the fact that Native American people in this country were also slaves, but they were not freed on Juneteenth.
Mm. Al, thank you. Dinah, what do you say? This extend beyond African Americans?
Yes, it does. There were some communities that were not freed until after the Civil War, 1866, 1867. And that's absolutely true. But I think also one of the things that's complicated about the Native American part of this history is that Native Americans had been enslaved in parts of the United States, but also Native Americans were also enslavers.
Mm. Let me bring another voice now from Oklahoma City. Oklahoma's Anastasia Pittman. She's a state senator. She sponsored legislation that directed the State Department of Education to add Juneteenth to the social studies core curriculum. She's currently a Democratic candidate for Oklahoma's lieutenant governor. Anastasia, welcome to On Point. Nice to have you.
Thank you. I'm happy to be here. Thanks for having me.
Well, thank you for being here. What made you want to add Juneteenth to the social studies core curriculum?
Well, one of the things we have to do, Oklahoma updates their curriculum every 10 years. So when we failed to do that due to a budget crisis 10 to 12 years ago, we now have an opportunity to update curriculum that will include Juneteenth and the history involving our emancipated African Americans to the state social studies curriculum. So since we hadn't updated our books, and it's a requirement by law, we did a friendly amendment on a House bill that was coming through the Senate, and we were able to do that because if you don't update the curriculum, people who live outside of African American communities who are not exposed to the culture will never have an opportunity for diversity and inclusion in the classroom.
So what are we missing? What are we missing when we teach our kids about our nation's history with slavery?
One of the things we look to do is the diversity is the backbone of America. And when we are unable to talk about it, when we remove creativity and inclusion from the classroom, teachers are not equipping students because history is no longer required on an ACT test. So some social studies is not required on an ACT test. So teachers are having to teach to the test. And some students who are diversified by their religion or ethnicity have never, ever been exposed to what African Americans have endured. And so they wonder why white privilege in America prevails. And it's because African Americans have never really had an equal playing field. And now that they have access to education, the education policies don't bring about diversity.
So what do you want our kids to know? What's the message that you're hoping to convey as you're making this strong stand? What do you want people to know, kids to know in our schools?
One of the things we want kids to know is that there's relevant reading. There's cultural competencies that need to be practiced in our curriculum, in our pedagogy, in our methodology of teaching. And so I've created some resources that are perpetual. They live beyond myself. The Long Road to Liberty book is a tourism book that we've created through legislation. It's free to the public. You can go online and order it through travelok.com, and anyone can have the rich history of the contributions of African Americans in the state of Oklahoma. And we want to encourage other states to do that, promote their history, promote their state, and it will in turn generate revenue and create economic development.
Great, great story and great work. Anastasia Pittman, thank you very much for being on to tell us about it today. Thank you. And happy Juneteenth.
Thank you so much.
Thank you. Van and Dinah, how do you see textbooks and education in our schools today handling the issue of slavery? Have textbooks glossed over this issue? And how do we engage in the history surrounding slavery? Dinah, you first.
Well, we know there was a controversy in Texas a couple years ago when a Houston mother saw that the way enslaved people were being brought to America in her textbook, which was a McGraw-Hill textbook, they said that they were they came here as immigrants. And the history was sort of softened and sort of sugarcoated. And she thought this was outrageous to talk about enslaved ships, the forcible removal of more than 12 million people as, you know, immigrants, as if they came voluntarily. And that was changed. The textbook made a change to it. And we do know that Texas textbooks, along with California textbooks, are often adopted and used throughout the country. They're sort of the gold standard. So we're starting to see slight changes. They made a revision. I do workshops through Humanities Texas with teacher training and teaching them how to teach about the history of slavery. But the standards have to change first. Mm. And the problem is some of the standards, they will talk about the Civil War and Reconstruction, and slavery is hardly mentioned. There's only one place in the fourth grade curriculum and seventh grade curriculum for the state of Texas where they even mention the word slavery. slavery.
And Van, as I read here, textbooks often accentuate the positive, if you will, focusing on heroes like Harriet Tubman or Frederick Douglass without also giving kids the full painful context of slavery, right?
Right. I'm a Southerner, and I went to school in some pretty poor rural Southern districts. This is emblematic of how the instruction has always worked. When our district flooded and we got the even older textbooks, they were the ones that were talking about, you know, the War of Northern Aggression and stuff like that. Like, this is not ancient history. This is how the deficiencies in kids' understanding of Black history, and not just of Black history, but of how the modern world they live in was built and born. And so, like you said, you know, when you have textbooks that for whatever reason can only focus on people who've been made heroes, they only focus on the industriousness of enslaved people, they only focus on they never focus on the actual mechanism of slavery, of what actually happened. In doing that, you essentially create conditions for the mindset that, okay, you got out of bondage, get over it. And that's the prevailing, I think, if you only had that education, I don't understand why anybody would expect anyone to think anything else.
And Dinah, just to wrap this up, slavery is often described in these books as a Southern problem, right? It's much, much more. Even in the run-up to the Civil War, the North profited mightily from slave labor.
Absolutely. Clothing that enslaved people wore were made and produced and manufactured in the North. The shoes they wore, the ships that transported people. The North was connected to slavery even through 1865. And there's a lot of information that I think we're starting to see some changes. Teachers, their hands are tied, though, because they feel like they have to teach for the test, like your previous guest, Ms. Pittman, mentioned. And so I think until we open up and expand, as Van said, to teach the truth and the whole history, even the painful parts, because kids can handle it. I do workshops for kids all the time, 5 years old and up, and they can understand and handle this history.
And they need to know the truth. Here's Evan in Warwick, Rhode Island. Hi, Evan. Welcome to On Point.
Hi, Jane. Thank you for this conversation and having my call.
Thank you.
I just wanted to add to this. I really think that part of the problem that we have is we don't teach how, you know, slavery led to freedom, which then was led to Reconstruction, which then was dismantled by white elites, which then led to Black coats, which then led to Jim Crow, which then led to mass incarceration, which then led to the situation we see today. You know, people seem to teach the history as if it happened in a vacuum, and we don't make any connections.
Need to be more, I see, bring it all together in a way. Evan, thank you very much. Let's get Pat in here from Somerville, South Carolina. Hi, Pat. You're on the air.
Hi, Jane.
Hi.
I'm a retired teacher from the Department of Juvenile Justice, and unfortunately, predominantly Black students were in my classes. So on Juneteenth, I would put up there, this is Juneteenth Day, and they were all puzzled. Nobody in any of my classes knew what that was. And apropos, this is all about education, but I think it begins at home. They should have been told this at home, showing the parents showing them what they need to celebrate.
Pat, thank you very much. Van Newkirk, what does it mean to celebrate Juneteenth in this current political and cultural climate?
Well, I would caution, as to the last caller, that, you know, everybody celebrates their emancipation and freedom in a different way. Juneteenth is up until very recently, a regional celebration that becomes national. So there are lots of places where Black people really don't celebrate it or have it. And I think that's the nature of, again, the celebration of freedom and liberation. It's up to the individual, to the community, to the family to decide how do we celebrate this amazing thing that our ancestors fought for and died for. And everybody has their own way. And that's in this modern moment when we're thinking about when hate crimes are increasing, when you see the Klan marching in the streets again, it's very important to tell people about the story of Juneteenth, about the story of these people who fought, who really pushed for their own freedom. And I think that's sort of how we build an antidote to the kinds of hate, the kinds of just lack of empathy that seem to be running our current debate. Mm.
Dinah Ramey Berry, Juneteenth is enjoying quite a resurgence within communities across this country. I've read about the Smithsonian celebrating, the Henry Ford Museum. They've begun sponsoring celebrations of Juneteenth. Tell us about what's happening nationally. Even a statue of Frederick Douglass unveiled in Washington, D.C. today.
You're also finding nationally that people are reading or listening to Frederick Douglass's speech, What for the Slave is the 4th of July. And I think that's an excellent comparison to listen to on this day, to understand why the 4th of July was not the same kind of independence for African Americans as Juneteenth represents, because this was when their freedom from slavery was recognized. So you see that, the speeches, you see church services in different states that are happening. Some of them are parades, picnics. As we heard earlier from the earlier caller, people are getting the day off. I think it's really a time of reflection, and that people do what they want to do if they know about it, to honor and celebrate the resilience of African-American people.
Van Newkirk, on this day of celebration, what would you have us remember about Juneteenth?
I think what I would have people remember is Juneteenth itself represents a delayed emancipation. It's only when people were informed through the ravages of war, through forced bondage, even when it was against the law. It took a long time, and it took lots of people pushing for their own freedom for it to get there. And that's probably the lesson we should pull from it, is freedom is not always granted immediately. It's often fought for. It takes time. But there's always hope. And there's always some, I think, facet of liberating oneself, liberating our communities, and of building through that hope.
Dinah, how will you be celebrating Juneteenth?
Well, I always spend the day talking to my son about it. He's 12, and we do some readings. And just today, to be on this radio show was one way for me to celebrate it.
And you, Van?
I have a one-year-old, so I'm going to try to tell him what I can before he runs away from me.
Well, thank you very much for being here today and for helping us understand the history of Juneteenth and why it's significant and why we should recognize and celebrate this day in our history. Thank you very much. Dinah Ramey Berry, Professor of History, African and African Diaspora Studies at the University of Texas. Dinah, thank you very much.
Thank you for having me.
And Van Newkirk, staff writer at The Atlantic. Always a pleasure, Van. Thanks.
Thank you.
We go out here, listeners, with Etta James and her joyous rendition of Swing Low, Sweet Chariot. Listeners, thanks to you for your input. I'm Jane Clayson. This is On Point.
Swing low, sweet chariot, coming for the